Africans at home and throughout the diaspora. Africans at home and throughout the diaspora. Unity is strength. We've got the power.
Stop the fussing and the fighting. Now's the time to do the right thing.
We need more unity. Cool.
Stop the fussing and the fighting.
Yeah.
Now's the time to do the right thing.
In the spirit of Umoja, embrace with love.
Yes, embrace with love. That's what it's all about, y'all. But it's also about some of that fighting. And we've had to do a little bit more fighting than we used to under the MAGA regime. But this is Jamala Rogers, your host of Voices from the Battlefield. Compliments of Black Radio Hall of Fame. And we are not in the studio, but we are going on just the same as if we were. We are live streaming on Facebook now. So if you are joining us, let some of your friends and family know that we are live now. And we have, I think, a very informative show ahead of you. But I want to remind you that there is still genocide going on in Gaza, that you have war criminals who are making sure that happens. And so just because it's out of the media spotlight doesn't mean that those Palestinians are not suffering and losing their land on a daily basis. And so we want to stay tuned to that as best we can. Sometimes I go to Al Jazeera. Sometimes I go to a special place of an Arab market, and they always are watching like what's going on in the Middle East on those televisions to stations and channels and live stream that we don't normally have access to. So I always go and say, what's going on? Because I can't find anything out, because we don't get the news in a comprehensive way. As you all well know, we get the Western version of it, sanitized about what's going on in other parts of the world. But we're going to stay tuned. And I always tell you to find you a news source that you trust, because there's so much disinformation out here. It's like alarming. It is. But also, this is the time I remind you that we have a 34-count convicted felon in the White House. We have a pathological liar in the White House, along with all the rest of his staff who seem to be following suit with the lies. I mean, it's just ridiculous how that these folks can look you straight in the TV camera and just lie to your face. I mean, just lie, 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 lie. But yeah, and we're getting closer. You know, I've been saying that he's not a convicted child pedophile, but we're getting closer to his relationship with Epstein in these files that are being released, and some of them that have been pulled back that have crucial information about his involvement. So I still will say that he is a protector of pedophiles, because he is. And the fact that you have victims, I didn't watch that foolishness last night with the State of the Union, but I know that there were victims of Epstein there, and he did not even acknowledge them. So that lets you know that what I'm saying about protecting the pedophiles, and remember that's what he told Congresswoman Green, you can't be a part of this because it's going to hurt my friends. So that ought to have told you a lot right there. But, you know, things are still going on in Minneapolis. Those folks are still fighting against ICE. And to remind you that even though the media has focused on Renee Good and the other white male, there have been people of color that have been killed by ICE during this whole escapade, not necessarily in Minneapolis, but overall. And I think when we start racking up the casualties, it's going to be pretty, I think, pretty dismal. But yeah, that's happening. And so abolish ICE is a real demand, and one that all of us, whether we're in Minneapolis or not, should be rallying around, because there's going to be an ICE campaign coming to you. And they already have tried to identify some of these detention centers. I don't call them detention centers. I call them concentration camps, because once people get in there, it's going to be hard as hell to get out. And so what we are seeing is the resistance and organizing by communities to say, not in this, not in my neighborhood, or not in my city, not in my county, which is what's going to stop this from really growing. Happy to report that Kansas City put a stop on theirs, at least for 5 years. So, at least it gave them some reprieve. You can't come in there but a quote concentration camp for the next 5 years. And I know that the current mayor, Mayor Q, is not going to be there in 5 years. So, but he was trying to protect the city until he is, while he is there. And so we have to do the same thing wherever we are. When we hear about it, we need to say, no, let's organize and make sure this doesn't happen, because they're trying to find any facility that's big and open and vacant to use as a concentration camp, and we ought to say no. This is still Black History Month, and we're getting to the end of the official month, but that doesn't mean we don't celebrate. I just want to say that, and give a shout out to the staff over there at Riverview Gardens High School, who invited myself and Percy Green to speak to some of the young people there. And I was so encouraged to see that the Black males that were there, starting with the principal, Dr. Smith, and you have Brother Kenyatta, Salim Kenyatta, you had Coach Little. So that doesn't mean that it's not important for the women to be there, but we've been holding it down for a while. And sometimes, and particularly now in this day and age, and we'll talk about that some more, there needs to be Black males for other young Black males to see. The invitation came from Sister Angela over there. So it was a really, really good time, and the young people had some really good questions to ask. But I think we put something on their minds, so that's a good thing. All you do can do is drop seeds, because sometimes, it takes a while for those seeds to really root and grow. But I always just love to be in the presence of young people. We have so much going on in St. Louis that we need to be atop of. People are still not getting the recovery dollars from the tornado. So that's a point for us to really be rallying and organizing around, because money is now going to possibly be turned back into the feds. And why that is, who turns money back in on any level? I mean, and these folks still have tarps on their houses. I mean, come on, y'all. What's going on? So the person that we need to be looking at is the mayor. The mayor's got those funds. Some of them came from the state. Thank goodness for some of our state reps and state senators who made sure we got money from the state to buttress what we got from the feds. But why is it not being released? And so I did get a chance to hear a positive story when I was at the Vashon last week. I think I told you I was presenting on Team 4, but there was a person whose family was caught up in the storm, and the story that they told was really fascinating. First of all, the family owned like a two-family flat, and after the tornado, they found out that only, or maybe they found out before. I think they were like getting ready to do something different, and they sell it or whatever. But they found out from an insurance agent that only half of the building was insured, and they didn't know that. It's like, what? How are you gonna insure half of it? What happens if the other half is what gets burned? And it didn't make any sense. So they got a family friend to redo that, and apparently just in time, because when the tornado hit, the whole building was insured, and they're able to rebuild. And she actually showed me photos of the rebuilding of the house in progress. So they say they're not going anywhere, but the stars lined up for them, because I could tell you, if that happened to them in terms of being uninsured or not insured, you could bet your bottom dollar that there were people who thought they had insurance, or who thought the landlord or the building owner had insurance, only to find out that they did not. So it's just lots of sad stories still mixed up in that. And some of them we get to hear the negative, but this was a positive one I want to share with you, that people had the foresight to like relook at that policy and find out that half of it was insured. I mean, who does that? That's, to me, that's unethical. I mean, and if you did that, you say, okay, you only have enough money for me to insure half. So how do you want to work this? I mean, it's so many ways that that could have been done. But hey, you know, when it comes to black folks, people think we don't know what's going on and that we're not worth what needs to happen. And so that is how they conduct their business, which is really sad. So we got to be forever vigilant about what's going on around us, you all. So we're going to really look at what's going on today and how it's affecting our young people, because it is, it's affecting us. I talked yesterday about the fact that within a 4 month period of time, we've had two young people commit suicide in the OBS family. One of them was 10 years old and the other one was 24. So what's going on? And this has been, the rate has been going up since COVID, that young black men are thinking that's the only way to deal with this situation. That's on us as a society. That's on us as a black community to find out and figure out what's going on and really, you know, increase the protective factors for these young men who seem to be dealing and not coping with it as well as the girls. And so, and for good reason, and we'll talk about that. But I want to introduce my guest today that I've known for a long time, and we got very similar backgrounds and thoughts too. So you probably say, oh yeah, y'all like probably talked about this beforehand. But no, we come from the same cloth in terms of the Nguzo Saba, the seven principles, and use that as the guiding force in our lives. And so when we think about parenting, when we think about black business, when we think about community service, all of that is wrapped up in the Nguzo Saba. So I want to welcome to the show Bolanle and Ambanizwe, and she is I would say a guru around black parenting, but she does so much more. And you know, she was a former teacher who started to look around and say, wait a minute, our kids are surrounded by adults who don't know what the hell is going on, so maybe we need to do both. And so that's always Bolanle been my thing. It's like when you start looking at what's wrong with kids, look at the adults in their life, and that'll tell you the story. But welcome to damn, I almost forgot my damn show name. Welcome to Voices from the Battlefield, because you've been on this battlefield. And like I always tell people, the battlefield looks quite different for different folks. And so dealing with our kids is a definite battlefield, particularly black youth. So welcome, and I'm just looking forward to our conversation.
Thank you so very much, Mama Jamala. And you're absolutely right. That's exactly how I got into parenting education, because I was teaching at St. Louis's Frederick Douglass Institute, Independent African Centered School. I taught there about 11 years, and halfway through that experience, I started to notice that a couple of disturbing things. One was that parents would come to me and say things like, you know what, Mom Balale, we were home last night and little Johnny was acting a fool. And I told him, if you don't straighten up, I'm gonna tell Mom Balale. And he straightened right up. And I was like, I kept hearing that. And I'm like, wait a minute, I'm supposed to be, as the teacher saying, if you don't straighten up, I'm gonna tell your mom or I'm gonna tell your dad. We don't realize that we're giving away our power as parents, And then another thing that would happen was that, because I taught the beginners, I taught the four-year-olds, five-year-olds, six-year-olds, beginning everything, beginning reading, beginning math, beginning writing, all of that. And so the homework, as you could imagine, would be pretty simple, like tracing, could be counting and stuff like that. And children would come in
Colors.
without their homework, right? And they come in without their homework done. And I'd ask parents, why isn't the homework done? Oh, I can't get them to do anything. So I'm like, oh, we're talking about 4 and 5 year olds. What's happening? It's with
And
us.
what's going to happen with them when they turn 15, 16?
Exactly. And so I wrote the first book back in 2007. This is quick, easy reading for parents. The one thing that we can do is about 23 pages of reading. The one thing that we can do that dramatically improves our effectiveness as parents is, it helps makes life easier for us as parents, makes life easier for our children, and for anybody else who has to deal with our children. And that one thing is to teach our children to obey us as parents. If we don't do anything else as parents, We need to make sure that our children are doing as we instruct. We call at home is called obedience. Everywhere else in the world is called following instructions. If we get our children in the habit of listening to us and following our instructions, then it makes life easier for them all the way around.
But Belonglay, isn't that part of Imani in the Guzu Saba, the seven principles, to believe in all our hearts? When I, so
Our
really, if you
people, our
understand
parents,
that,
our
you
teachers, and
know,
leaders.
yes, and so that includes
Yes, ma'am.
parents. Yeah, there's an
Yes, ma'am.
African proverb that says something to the effect that adults can see further sitting down, the kids can't standing up. And I always remember that because we have a vision of what's ahead, both in terms of the future, but even in terms of right in front of us, we already have a lived experience. So for a young person to be bucking up against that, now you 40, 50, 60 years old, and
Exactly.
what are you doing? But and
Exactly.
the other thing I would say to that, I definitely agree with that. But when people ask me, how do I get young people to do stuff that they can't seem to get them to do, and I got the same response as you do. When I first my first teaching experience was at a daycare, and I was the master teacher for the pre-K and kindergartners. And so I have high expectations for kids. I just do, particularly that age, because that's when they learning the fastest, learning, the little brains are moving. And they would go home and talk about what Mama Jamala said. Mama Jamala, and I would have literally people, mothers and parents coming in to say, "I need to see who this Mama Jamala is, because when I do something, he said, that's not what Mama Jamala told us to do." And she said, "Okay, I need to meet Mama Jamala." But luckily, it was in a good spirit, like maybe I need to be learning from Mama Jamala. But the thing that I tell them I do is not just the expectations, but I tell them what I need them to do and why.
Yes,
And
ma'am.
people don't think that that sounds simple, but if you ask young people to do stuff, generally they try to please adults.
That's
And so you
true.
say, "I need you to sit down in your seat and also to finish this project because it's important." They do it. And so I'm sure, Belanya, you're doing that too, just in terms of the expectation they see from what happens when I do right by Mama Belanlay. I feel good when I see her face light up about how what I learned. And so that's something I think is difficult to get parents to do, because they think if you negotiate, concede, and all of that, nah. Again, like you said, you're giving up your power. Here's
Yes,
what I
ma'am.
need you to do. Here's how I need you to do it. Here's why I need you to do it. And we're going to have a conversation, but it's not going to be about if you're going to do it.
Exactly. Exactly.
The parenting trainings that you do, what comes up for you besides some of these things about, like, I can't get Johnny to do nothing I say?
Well, the main thing that comes up that I make sure that I communicate to parents at as close to the beginning as possible is that the fact that we are having the struggles that we have as parents is completely understandable given the fact that we are brought up in a society that doesn't have a process that equips its people with the information and tools needed to be effective parents. This African tradition had that. We called it rites of passage, where we and it started early in it started in childhood, equipping us with the information and tools we need to be able to function in society, to be able to function in our families, and to be good spouses, and to be good parents, and that kind of thing. That's part of everyday life training, and it, with the emphasis on relationships as opposed to, I've heard it said that. That from our worldview, that we use things to get people versus the other worldview uses people to get things. And so our emphasis is on the relationship, our relationships among each other. And so it is understandable that we would have a process then to take our people through to make sure that they have the information and skills to be able to support, continue to grow the village, to support family, to grow children, to raise children into respectful, responsible people who advance the community with their with their talent, skills, and creativity and raise their children to do the same thing. Well, this society doesn't have a process to do that. And so we're pretty much left to our own devices, and we make it up as we go along, depending on how we feel about the way we were raised. Sometimes we do what our parents did, and sometimes we do opposite from what our parents did, depending on how we feel about how our parents raised us. And so when you look at it that way, it helps to explain why there are so many different variations in how people choose to raise their children, because there are experiences, life experiences that we haven't had a chance to really look at and be able to analyze and to be able to pair with true and accurate information and tools about parenting. You understand what I'm saying?
Absolutely.
Yeah. And
And so
so
I'm thinking, go ahead.
Oh, well, I was going to say that I try to share this information with parents at the very beginning, at the outset, because the goal is to create an environment where we understand that, okay, it's not just me. This is not just a problem that I am having. This isn't a shortcoming of mine. This is something that is happening simply because there's not a process, and we're all doing the best we can with the information and tools and resources we have available to us in this moment.
And when you talk about the process, I'm also thinking about for some generations, there was the African tradition of raising kids, and it was a more collective process. And so, even though, and that's because our communities were a little, were segregated, first of all, and so you got a chance to really pass those traditions on. But also, you saw the fruits of the collective process, because you had the messaging from everybody in the community. So if you went, for example, for me, my Girl Scout leader was the same person that did the Sunday school. So and then, my gym teacher went to the church. I mean, so you got all these, just because of segregation, you had all of these adults that were in and out of your life that had the same message. You're going to be the best that you can be, and I'm going to make sure of that. And when I need to involve your parents, I know them well.
That's right. That's right.
So it was like this a collective expectation. It wasn't
Mm-hmm.
even that, okay, mom expects this of me, so does my neighbor, so does my teacher at school. And so the uplifting was at a different level. And so I think when we started to see the disintegration of our communities and also the family, we started to see how that was impacting our children. And so this whole African village concept is real, but that was then and this is now. So I saw somebody ask on social media in response to this whole thing about it takes a village to raise a child. The question was, what if the village is dysfunctional and toxic?
Yes,
And
ma'am.
how would you respond to that? Like, if we depended on the village to raise the kids and reinforce what we're doing, and they are at in a chaotic way, what happens then?
Well, what happens is we have what we have now. We get what we have now. That's what happens. Now, if the question becomes whether or not we want to, what is it that we want? If we want to recapture the essence and feeling of community that you so eloquently laid out, around the cohesion and the agreement among adults, if we want to recapture that, then we need to do the work of recapturing that. And that starts with us adults, those of us who have that as a concern, those of us who want to recreate that. We have to do the work of recreating it. And that, it starts with coming together to even talk about it, but and making it a priority to talk about it, not just in passing conversations, looking at children going, oh, see, that's what's wrong with them now. See, we missing the
That's why I
village.
don't be
That's what.
bothered with them little hooligans.
Right. And come together in a in a in a deliberate, intentional, and proactive way, as proactive as possible, given the fact that we're already in it. But I'm saying to do it because we know that we need to. We're doing it because we're choosing to do it. And because something that I've said before is that, because people be like, oh, black people, we just too far gone. And I don't believe that, because we're going to come together because we choose to, we see the value in doing it, or we're going to come together because we have no other choice. So either way, it's going to happen. And so it comes down to us choosing how we're going to do that. And I'm happy that you even brought up that question, because that's one of the things I've been doing this work around parenting education since actively since 2007. And one of the things that I've come to understand, and in the process of proving through data, is that in order to do this thing exactly right here that you just asked me about, we have to make it something that parents want to participate in, a conversation that parents want to participate in. It's because we don't have a process that requires parents to learn this information. We don't yet have that process that requires it, that makes it mandatory. So we either have to make it something parents want to do or something parents have to do. And so there's not, we haven't created anything yet that causes us to say, that gives us the power to say, well, in order to get this thing, you have to do this. But I think we're coming to that. I'm doing work to get put that in place. But until then, we have to make it something that parents want to do, or at least are willing to do. And that brings us to the event that's happening this coming Saturday. It's a parent information session for parents who live in the city of St. Louis and who have a youth between the ages of 10 and 18. We are having an information session for parents in the city who have children at that age. We're meeting from 1 to 2 on Saturday, this coming Saturday, and we're going to give out information about a parent focus group that we are having. And it covers a 2-week period. The parent focus group covers a 2-week period, and parents who complete it get a $500 stipend. So I said that about the
So
$500 stipend
that's
for a
the
reason.
carrot, not
Right.
the
The $500 stipend is the thing that gets parents' attention, and it lets parents know that we are serious about this, because $500 is serious, okay? It's $500, and we are just that confident in the information that we have to deliver, that we believe that we will be able to turn the gear on strengthening our relationships in our community, reestablishing that sense and feeling of community that you just talked about.
And so, what exactly happens in the focus group? Are you pulling out information from parents to help you develop something, or are they getting something based on what you already know, or both?
They are, it's kind of both, but it's mainly because what we're doing is we're getting parents' feedback. Because it's a focus group, we're getting parents' feedback about the information that we have gathered over since 2007. And we've put it in a workshop form, and we go over the information, and we're constantly getting feedback about the exercises, about the discussion points, that kind of thing. And and you'll learn, of course, more about it in the information session, but it's a 24-hour workshop that is facilitated over the course of 2 weeks. And when parents complete it and they give the feedback and all of that, after they've completed all the exercises and participated in all the discussions and all of that, and we have their documented feedback, parents get $500 for participating.
That
So
sounds like an easy 500, Valanye. That sounds like an easy 500, because a lot of these parents are vocalizing to other people, to whoever listen. These kids, blah, 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 blah. So now is the time that you actually can make it count by coming to this workshop, and then you'll be compensated for that. I can't think of a win-win Man, for a parent who actually is trying to make a difference in their children's lives, because for many, and this is a thing also that I, have to offer some resistance to, is how people quickly criminalize parents, particularly single moms.
Yes, ma'am.
And I think that for a lot of parents, just for the sake of sanity and how we our brain just compartmentalizes stuff, that at a certain point you do seem like you're giving up because it's just so damn hard and you don't have any
It's
support.
exhausting.
It's exhausting. And you seem like everything is out of your control. And so just trying to protect yourself, you shut down and you say, if little Johnny wants to go out there and do that, that's his problem. And it seems like it's insensitive, but it's a call for help. And this is what I keep trying to tell other people. When a parent does that, that's a cry for help. They're not giving
Yes,
up on their
ma'am.
kid. Nobody wakes up in the morning and say, I don't give a damn about little Johnny. If he want to go out there and kill himself or he kills somebody else, I don't give a damn. That, if they're saying that, they don't really mean that. That's a protector for them. So I'm just thinking about the folks who come, who going, and this to me is historic. I don't know that anybody I've heard about with Black parents that is doing that, and their feedback is going to be a part of something bigger and more expansive that's going to help just not them, but a community. So I'm really excited and looking forward to whatever the results that are going to come out of that, because I think it truly can help not just parents, but our community. Because
Yes,
we
ma'am.
all, I keep telling people, we all are village parents, even if you don't have them anymore, and kids, or you never have them, you still are a village parent.
That's right. That's right. If you are, that's one of our foundational belief statements. If adults are both parents and teachers, teachers and parents are two sides of the same coin. And if you're an adult and you are in charge of if you're in charge of any activity with a child, you're acting as a parent, and any interaction with a child and all of that is a parent-child interaction. As adults, we don't have the to be thinking that, oh, that's not my child. I'm not a role model to this child or anything like that.
Ain't
That
my
is
business.
unrealistic of us to think that, because whatever we're doing in front of children is an example. Whatever we're doing, however we're doing it, we are showing them that, hey, this is a way that you can do this thing. Whether we believe it or not, or whether we've ever thought about it or not, because children are, they're sponges. They're soaking up everything. They're soaking up everything that they see. And they don't have the filter to say, oh, well, yeah, that's not in my best interest, or that's not in that person's best interest, so then it shouldn't be in my, children don't think like that. They are
No,
copying adults. They're looking at, oh, okay, I saw you do that, but let me do it too, because I'm copying. I'm pretending for times when I'm gonna get grown. I'm always looking forward to when I'm gonna be grown and I'm gonna practice
And I
when
could
I'm
do
grown and I'm gonna
what
write all that down.
they're doing.
Exactly. See, I can do
I remember
that.
when I did parenting classes for HDC, Human Development Corporation,
And
and one of the things I would tell, and these were people that were part of that program because they were getting some kind of services or resources, but they all had to go through the parenting program, which I thought was really amazing because I
that
told them the
is.
same thing we talked about. You are going to be interacting with young people, whether they're yours or not. So
Yes.
here's some things. But I would tell them, I said, the time for you to be a lazy parent is not from 0 to 5, because that's when their little brains are growing at a rate that's almost incomprehensible. And so what you can teach during that time is going to be with them for life. Now
Yes,
you're
ma'am.
going to get a little reprieve from about 6 to 11, because you'll see how what you've done is working, and then you're doing a little tweaking. But now come adolescence and teen years, you got to get wake up again and be ready for the turmoil, because they're going to be twisting and turning in the wind. But if you lay that foundation, whenever that twist is over, they're going to land on their feet. But you got to be there for them while they're doing that. So So they appreciated that. It's like, oh, I said, because remember how fast you learned as a 3-year-old, and people would tell you, say this, and you do this, dance like this. I mean, you see it all on social media, like what kids are doing at 3 and 4, especially the post-COVID kids. Oh my goodness. They're like from another planet. These folks are sharp. They came into the world like almost talking, almost walking. So the brain development is really crucial at that point. So you don't want to have trauma during that time. You don't want to have negativity. You want to try to minimize all of that, because those, and the other thing I talk about, Belanya, is memories. You got to give kids some really fun and joyful memories, because that's what they're going to have to tap into when they have challenges as adults. And most of us do it. You think about, oh man, when I was this age, we did this, that, and the other. And just thinking about it brings you joy and a smile on your face. But if you don't have that, if all you got is negativity, where you saw somebody get shot at, or you got knocked upside the head because you asked a question, I mean, that's not going to be a reservoir of positivity. And so I think for people like us who are trying to get people, first of all, to love young people. And that's the thing. I had so many people tell, I don't even like kids. I don't want to be bothered with them. But that's because they don't have the tools and at that point the patience. But when you realize that they're so much a part of our lives going forward, particularly as we age, because the other thing I tell people, okay, you don't want to be bothered with them, you don't care if they're educated and got good character. What about when you're in the nursing home? How do you think they're going to be treating you? So it's the whole thing of reciprocity that we know from Maat in African cultures, that what you give is what you're going to receive. And just being a humane person is going to have to send waves through our community. And that's what I think we don't have now, is like that. So I'm wondering what part, because I know you're African centered, whether you an educator in the classroom or not,
Yes,
as
ma'am.
am I, how do you center Black love, Black history, Black ancestry in the parenting process?
I love that question. I can't not center it. Because
Because it's so much a
I'm
part of
thinking,
you, I know. The way you dress, the way you act, it's all there.
it's that, but it's also the way that we're thinking about what our responsibility is. Once you learn something about our way of looking at it and doing things, once we look think once we compare African-centered thought, African-centered worldview to European thought and worldview, we generally see the like Malcolm X said, like Malik El Shabazz said about the difference between a clean glass of water and a dirty glass of water. I don't have to tell you about the dirty water. I just put a clean glass of water next to it, and you make the choice. And so when, that's why the approach to the Tapping Our Parental Power workshop is the way that it is because number one, want to make it clear, like I said a few minutes ago, that this society doesn't have a process that equips us with information and tools to help us to be effective parents. And if they don't have that for their own society, their own mainstream society, they certainly don't have it for us, given our unique experience in this country. You know, that we have, because we have a whole layer of other understandable dysfunction that anybody would be experiencing. If any people who've gone through what we've gone through as a people in this country would be in the condition that we're in. So we're having and continuing to have a human response to inhumane treatment, to ongoing multi-generational systemic inhumane treatment. And so, when creating that understanding among us as parents, it helps to relax the environment so that we're more open, so we don't feel ourselves to be so defensive, because
And isolated.
that's right, exactly. That's the word. That's the word, isolated, because we don't, so we understand that, okay, number one, this isn't something that I created. Even though I'm making parenting mistakes, I'm making mistakes and I know I'm making mistakes, but I understand that it's not because there's something inherently wrong with me. It's because of the environment that we're in. The fish is the last to discover the water. The fish is born into that environment. The fish isn't responsible for the pollution in the water. The fish is born into it. Okay. And that's us. So once that's the main thing to get that understanding with parents so that we can relax the environment and actually being willing to look at our current condition. Because
Yeah.
all of the things that we're dealing with, it's scary.
Yeah,
It's
yeah.
scary to think about, and it's easier to do other things besides look at it. And so we have a lot of guilt, a lot of shame attached to our current condition. And that's understandable because we've been taught to feel ashamed of our position, of our condition and all of that. And that's really, really quite the job they've done on us to get us to feel ashamed about being affected by centuries of inhumane treatment. So,
Now you make me think about clarifying a little bit more deeply what who's eligible for the workshop that you're talking about with the focus group, because if we adhere to this notion of a village, that might be somebody who's had interaction with young people who's not, quote, a parent by the standards that a definition of parents. So I'm looking at, for example, I remember the Organization for Black Struggle was trying to get a grant from somebody. This has been some years ago, and they wanted this whole nuclear family thing. And so we were saying that's not the way that we deal with it, because we want the parents to be able to blah blah blah. And we say, well, we look at all of us as parents. We do, really truly practice the village concept. And so they went on and on and said, we said, keep your money. We're not gonna change what we do. This is part of who we are. And so Tutao Nana, which means bye bye in Kiswahili. So this whole village notion is foreign to people because they want to go with the nuclear concept. And so how much of a stretch are you all allowing for people to participate?
Not very much, and I'll tell you why.
Okay.
But I first want to say that I love that idea, and I believe that there is a way that we can still come at it from that perspective. So we could talk about that because
Okay.
I
Yeah.
have ideas.
Yeah.
But for this particular one, you really do have to be a parent of a 10 to 18 year old because of our partnership with the youth organization. It's a partnership with my 180 youth program. And so the reason why the parents have to have a child between the ages of 10 to 18 is because those are the ages that my 180 youth program serves. And so it's a partnership to really support the youth, because one of the reasons youth do not complete that program, the My 180 Youth Program, is because of lack of parent support. And so we were able to get a grant that allowed us to put in a parent support component that will increase the likelihood of youth completing it.
Wow. So I'm not promising the listeners anything, but you heard that there might be a part two to this focus group that includes folks that are, quote, non-parents in the traditional sense. Because I think if you're talking about a village, you really are talking about almost everybody.
Right,
That
we're talking, yes, everybody. Yes.
Everybody. And particularly those people who have an interest in youth. So you
That's
start
right.
with those folks first and then you move out. But I can think of some people that would love to be a part of that who may not have children right now, who are grown up.
Come on, come on.
So we're gonna put them on a waiting list because it might be something for them in the future. But right now, it's the most immediate ones. It's the folks who got that, what I would call a very vulnerable group in for living on in this day and age, that 10 to 18, that's where Belanya, that's where the stats are saying the suicide is. Rates are high for that group. They actually now are almost surpassing homicides, and so that to me is just bells and whistles for us to say
For sure.
we gotta move, we gotta move quick, y'all. We don't have a whole lot of time to be scratching our heads and all of that. And here's a program that people can readily say, "I need some help. I got some ideas, but I need somebody to help me through that." And I know there's been parenting classes. I just don't know how effective they are because a lot of times they're not with people who have the world view of what it means, first of all, to be a black child in America with black parents who have gone through in the sort of intergenerational trauma and lived experience that you talked about. Like, how can you possibly be a whole person who's bringing a child into the world that now your expectations are that you're going to be the greatest human being ever, when all along the way the messages have told you you are not worthy, you ain't shit, and you never will be shit. And so we are mouthing that out to our children, who are internalizing it for the next generation. And so we got to break the trauma. If not the physical trauma, at least the emotional and verbal trauma of hearing those messages like day in and day out, not just at home, but when we go to school, when we're out in the community and somebody sees somebody with, a young man with sagging pants and they look at them with disgust or they clutch their purses. And, those are all those are visceral things for young people who feel like, what? What are you doing? So I just think there's so much to be done in this area that has even been untapped, and I don't know what your capacity is. How many adults can you take in come Saturday?
Oh, well, the number of parents who can attend Saturday, that, there's not really a limit to that, but we have 20
Oh, you
slots.
mean you?
So
Oh,
we
I
have,
thought you were saying because $500.
But because, well, the information session is just to give you information about the actual focus group. And so we love to give, we have to give the right information and the accurate information and make sure the parents understand it so that they can register for that focus group. The information session, the information, the stuff that the information that we'll share is that we're sharing today is about how to register for the 1 hour information session that tells you everything you need to know about the parent focus group so that you can decide whether or not you can participate. Because the hours probably are the time frame of the workshops is probably the biggest thing that parents need to completely understand because there's no wiggle room around the hours. Okay. But
And will do you think in the near future, I don't know what the grant specs are, but will there be another such not just the information session, but the focus
another
group?
group. Well, we're at the end of the grant cycle regarding that. This is actually the second year that we are offering it because we had gotten the grant last year to do it, and we got the grant this year to do it. So, but there are opportunities to apply to other entities for funding and to do it presented different ways, that kind of thing, which is to the point where I was saying, about you, like, hey, we can do that, and we don't even have to wait for that. We can come together and decide how we want to craft that and then find the funding for it.
Or not. I mean, we could say those people who want to come and don't need funding, and I would not say don't need it, but that won't be the motivating factor. You come, whatever you, and if folks have some refreshments, that's cool. But I just think it's one thing for us to pay people to come. That's good if you can do it. But if not, you gotta say everything ain't gonna be, you get paid for it, y'all. It's not, but this is important to our community, so we need you to be here. So I'm just, as we look at the last few minutes of the show, I'm just thinking about the holistic way that you are presenting parenting, where you're looking at like the cultural identity, the role that culture plays in parenting, and the whole notion of the community, the village, and its role. Because even when we think about the rites of passage, during those ceremonies, adults have to pledge to take care of young people as they go through adulthood. So we didn't used to have to do that in the ceremony. People just knew that that was their responsibility. You see a young person, you do what you can to, like, mold them and shape them and pass them on to the next person. And to your point, Belanya, now we have to be more intentional about this because it's been erased from our culture, or attempts to erase them. And so it's not as prominent as it used to be, where people automatically assume, yes, that's the young people, I need to be involved. Because now people are backing off because people are saying, oh, they're dangerous, ungrateful, all of the stuff that keeps us from not, like, connecting. And as a result of that, our young people are feeling that kind of alienation, that kind of criminalization. What else can parents be thinking about who may not be able to participate at this point, either because they're not confident that they'll articulate it the way that, they think they should? What else can we give them to say, here's some stuff that you're on your way, but these are some basic stuff.
Oh, okay. Well, this book right here is a really nice basic thing because it's a $10 investment and it's 23 pages of reading
And where can people get that?
oh, you can get that from the UNIRISE website. That's the how do I share this information? Should I put it in the chat or do I need to, what do I need to do?
No,
UNIRISE.com.
just say it, and then what happens is when this gets uploaded to my website and to YouTube, then people can say, like, either write it down or whatever. But it on the website, we'll probably have a link to go to your website.
Okay, undirise.com. U letter U undirise.com. Undirise.com. That is where you could go to the store tab to purchase Tapping Our Parental Power in a Nutshell. It's a $10 investment. For the information session that's this coming Saturday, it is to register for the session, go to my180.org, my, I'm sorry, my180yp for youthprogram.org, my180yp.org. And on the homepage, you'll see a flyer for the parent focus group information session, and you just click on it. Click on that flyer and it'll take you to the registration page, and you register and make sure you're on time Saturday at 1 p.m. and it's 1 hour. It's a 1 hour meeting.
And that's going to be free to folks. And
It
if
is
you get to
free.
the next phase, you get paid. You don't have to pay except for your time and attention.
Thank
Wow.
you. So that man, there was something I was getting ready to say about that. I done forgot what it is, but let's see. Oh, you do have to be a city resident, St. Louis City resident. And you have also have to have a child who is between the ages of 10 to 18 years age.
Yeah, that to me, I don't think you can not want to be a part of that. I mean, there's just so much that we know goes on that we say we would like to
It's
have
risky. Offer guns at home.
some skills,
Right.
and here's a chance for people to really to get that
Offer
from
them
somebody that's
children.
been doing it literally for years.
And sharing your brutal feedback about it, because it really is about getting that information. So we need your feedback about
So there's a lot going on, and again, this is not the end of Black History Month, so there's a couple of things to announce here. One is that the Northside Movement Center is doing the ribbon cutting tomorrow, and this is at the old church there on Goodfellow. It's up on my website to get in there. That's free,
The
and the
fellow in
ribbon
West
cutting is at
Marcy.
3:30. But this is going to be quite, I think, a impetus for the North Side to have a movement center there. And Brick and Bible is going to continue. That performance is going to continue on to Women's History Month for good reason. The women who were part of that struggle for a union were Black, And I went to the performance and it was just amazing, amazing. And one of the questions that came out in the audience, Terry Smith was one of the leaders of that struggle. She was an 18-year-old black woman. This happened during the Depression when they said, we don't care, we want our money, we want a better working conditions. And people were asking, well, do we know of any descendants of Terry Smith? So I'm just going to put that out there. If anybody knows Terry Smith, who was one of, part of the Funston Nut Workers Strike, please get in touch with me so that we can let folks know, because this is not going to be the last of this particular Brick and Bible performance, and it's pretty, 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 pretty amazing. So I want to thank our guest, Balanle, my parenting guru, and we're going to have her back to talk about like some of the stuff that came out of the focus groups. But it's this is something dear to my heart. So we're going to continue to talk about Black parenting for people who are part of the village, whether they have kids or not. And so this is Jamala, your host, and I will see you on the battlefield. Thank you, Balanle.
Thank you so much. Thank you. Have a wonderful day.
Thank you, Sante.